Well, welcome to Guarding Talk back on 2NUR FM. Greg Richard joins Scott Sharp today. Well, joining us in the studio.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. It's been a couple of while between drinks for us.
It certainly has been, but always happy to be back here with you.
Ripping into it, ready to go. What have you got for us today, Scott?
Oh, some plants that are out in flower at the moment and are looking spectacular. The oleander, I know it's got a bad rap, but it's actually not such a bad plant.
Why has it got a bad rap?
Oh, because, you know, it's got the sappy stuff and people say it's a bit poisonous, but In fact, no more poisonous than other plants around the garden. New South Wales Christmas bush, it's out in flower. We'll talk about growing it. And also the canna lily, a magnificent plant for a wet place.
Rightio. I love the sound. The oleanders, that's a good name.
Oh, it is, and it's a fantastic, really tough plant.
Which kind of sounds like an old cruise ship.
Yeah, they're a nice plant. They've got a bad rap, though.
Because they're poisonous.
Yeah, they're not actually poisonous.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's this sort of a misnomer that, you know, the white sap that comes out of them can, you know, irritate the skin. Look, that might be so. I think to actually make yourself really, really sick, you'd have to eat a lot of the plant. So you probably just make yourself sick anyway eating that amount of plant.
Is that with a lot of plants as well, though? Because even if you're in gardening, like if a plant rubs against you, there's probably going to be some sort of irritation.
Yeah, look, and that's the truth. And there's lots of indoor plants like Diffenbachia that are incredibly poisonous. So I'm really not sure why the oleander got such a bad rap. But look, it's a Mediterranean plant, comes from North Africa, you know, Turkey, spread around into Greece and, of course, up into Italy as well, as the empire spread its tentacles out there. So it's made its way here to Australia as well, of course. It's a plant that will grow pretty much anywhere in Australia. It's quite amazing like that. It'll handle the humidity, handle the cold. You know, down south, look, it's going to do really, really well.
That's a big call because there's a lot of different areas in Australia.
Yeah, and it will grow there. I don't know. They've tested it by planting it in every single area, but on average, we think it would be able to grow anywhere in Australia. I think one of the reasons it gets such a bad rap is council used it, you know, for planting and at some, you know, points in time. And of course, then they just get straggly and horrible. But the great thing about the oleander is it's a very, very prunable plant, like a hackable plant. That's what I would say. You can almost get the chainsaw or the whippersnipper out, probably not that, but and really hammer it back down to the ground. And it'll come back, you know, just soft and lovely and quite containable for that. The great thing about it is this time of year, it's coming out in flower, so you get the, you know, really stark pink colours, the whites. You can get apricots and yellows. So a really attractive plant, tough, it'll handle the salt. Like I said, handle the frosts and the cold, do really, really well there. Get dwarf ones as well. So you can have them in pots if you need it. So it's not a plant that, you know, you think, oh, it's going to take over the whole yard. Yeah. You can get dwarf ones to use as little low hedging. Oh, you know, probably gets about, here's my hand out again.
I'd say probably 2 foot.
2 foot, two
maybe.
To 3 foot, yeah. Okay.
Nearly hip height.
You're very good. You're very good at that, aren't you? I just have to move my hands around and you give me the estimate of distance. Again, it can dry out as well. So if you've got one of the dwarf ones in a pot, they can dry out in the, you know, the baking, hot sun, and just a great little plant. And if you want one of the bigger ones, you know, for hedging, no problems at all. Just make sure you get out there and give it a regular prune.
Right. So it's fairly versatile.
It is a very versatile plant. Could it be any more versatile than the oleander?
It's Guarding Talk back on 2NUR FM. If you've got a question, 49216216. And we've got Emelisa now from Hamilton South, and she's got a question about blueberry bushes.
Afternoon, Emelisa. How are you going?
Hi. Thank you. I'm well.
Yeah. How can we help you with your blueberry?
I have two blueberries that are growing in pots.
Yes.
They are big pots. And they are growing nicely. They're beautiful plants or bushes. But they had lots of flowers, but absolutely no blueberries coming.
Oh,
I don't know, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah, look, that's no good. And blueberries are actually a very, very easy plant to grow as well. Probably not as versatile as the oleander, but a very easy plant to grow. You can have
that's
it in the pot, in the backyard, and you know the little fruits will come on. You can go out there each morning and get some more. What are you fertilising it with? That's probably going to be the issue here, being in a pot.
Oh, I use the Thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Fertilizer.
Yeah, and how regularly are you using that?
About once a month.
Okay. Look, it might be now that it's coming into flower and getting ready to fruit, just start using that, you know, pretty much almost every week, every 2 weeks, just to, yes.
Okay.
There's also sulfate of potash that you can get. Now, that improves and strengthens the flowers on there. So you could use that also in a liquid form. Make sure the plant's being really, really well watered, because if it is setting lots and lots of flowers at the moment, the first thing it'll do if it dries out is it will drop that flower bud to try and survive. Yeah, so important that it's being very, very well watered. Of course, you want nice, juicy blueberries as well. So letting the plant dry out, you're going to get poor shriveled little blueberries, and that's not something you really want. So lots of water, liquid fertilizer, and that sulfate of potash, and you should have some success, because there's not much else that really harms the blueberry except a, you know, a couple of ravenous birds that might come down and try and pick the fruit off there.
Oh, no, we're trying to keep the birds away.
Okay,
But okay, that sounds good. Maybe I did the fertilizing just a little bit less than needed. So
yes, and some extra water, and that should do the trick for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much for the call.
Thanks.
We've got Irene from Brightwaters, and she's got a question about propagation of daisies and also a question about the emu plants.
Hey, Irene, how can we help you today?
Thanks for taking the call. Look, I've had some lovely daisies over the spring, and I don't know whether or not, and I'd like to reproduce some of them in other parts of the garden, and I'm not sure, do I just cut all the dead flowers off and use them as seeds, or is it better to propagate a piece of the plant?
No, I reckon, well, you could let it self-seed and spread out naturally and, you know, just see what happens. But daisies are really, really easy plant to propagate. Just taking some cuttings from it, you can get some, you know, hormone powder, some rooting powder, they used to call it. You can actually dip the end of the sort of the branch in honey as well, if you wanted to.
So, and is that on the hardwood or the softwood?
Yeah, so this, I'll get to that. This is where you need to get, you know, just where it's sort of, you know, soft and you can see the, it's starting to turn hard. That's where you take your cuttings from there. That's
right.
Going to be where you're going to get your best growth. So you do want a sort of the hard wood, just slightly hard. That's where you dip that into the honey. You put that into your propagating mix and just water as normally, and probably give it about, or, you know, 2 to 3 months in that mix before you start prising it apart to make sure that the roots have spread out nicely for you.
Oh, thanks for that. And I've also got, I think they call it an emu plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful silver bush. Can that be propagated?
Yes, it can be. You'd be doing that in exactly the same way as you do the daisies. I'm not going to say to you that you might have the, you know, the same success that you would have with the daisy, because they are very, very easy to propagate. It's a native plant, so it's an Australian plant. They can sometimes be touchy, so you just have to make sure you've got a good prop mix, a good propagating mix that's well drained for the emu bush, and see how you go. You might not get as great a success rate as you do with the daisy plants.
And do I take the same sort of situation where the soft and the hard would come together?
Yes, exactly that. That's always the best place to take your propagation cuttings from.
And what is the better time to take those cuttings?
Right now is a great time, because everything's in full growth mode. Everything's supercharged at the moment. So a really good time before the heat kicks in. And look, that's another thing. If you are doing this propagation, don't leave it necessarily out in the full sun. You might try, if you've got a veranda somewhere, you can situate, you know, where you get some morning sun, you know, up around till, you know, 11 or 12 o'clock in the day, and then get them out of that really blasting afternoon sun, because it hasn't got a root system, so you just have to be really careful about your watering and about the heat that the plant's going to be getting.
Oh, thank you so much for that great advice. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, and thank you for calling, Irene.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
We've got Peter now from Mark's Points, and he's got a question about hydrangeas.
Afternoon, Peter. How can we help you?
Yeah, g'day there, Scott. I've got a few questions, mate, if you don't mind.
Go for it. Go for it. We'll get the pen and paper out and we'll start listing them down.
Look, the first one, my mother, who's now 93, had a hydrangea down the side of the house, not in the garden, just growing in the dirt.
Yes.
And it was a beautiful deep blue. And I took some cuttings from that about 2 years ago. And I've planted them in a really good garden bed at home and looked after them. And last year I got one flower and they were pink. So this year I've done a couple of things. I've used garden sulphur. I've also used a blooming agent, which I think is aluminium sulphate plus fertiliser. And again, the flowers are pale pink. I read on Dr. Google there on the weekend that someone recommended burying copper coins. So on the weekend, I've buried some copper. Is there anything else I can do to try and turn that colour?
No, look, you're doing absolutely everything that you can do. I think what's happened is you've just got, you know, completely different soil conditions to where the plant was originally, and you're now sort of trying to turn the ship around. So keep on doing that. It's probably going to be that next year and the year after you'll start to go back to that blue colour. Do you think you've changed it slightly at all? You said they're a little bit lighter?
It's a bit early to tell because it's only the second season. The first season, the cuttings are fairly small.
Okay.
All right, look, I'll keep chipping away. Now, I went to my mum's this morning and she's got some hydrangeas in the garden down the other side of the house and they're absolutely covered in mealybugs.
Yes.
What can you recommend for me to try and get rid of those, please?
Look, at first I would use pyrethrum, mix it up into the spray, give it a really, really good drenching. So it's running right down and around the plant. If you don't have success with that, and look, obviously you're not just going to do it once, you do it a couple of times to see how you've gone with it. If you've had no success with that, you might just then have to up it to a slightly more harsher chemical like Malathon, for instance, and do exactly the same thing, a good drenching, and that should get rid of the mealybug. You could also add some white oil into that as well. Into the insecticide, because that'll sort of gum it up and actually, well, mealybug has a sort of a waxy, if you look at them really, really carefully, under a magnifying glass or whatever, you'll notice that they've almost got a coating over them. And the white oil will actually help break that down and get the poison chemical down into the actual insect and affect it. So just a touch of white oil won't harm that as well.
Okay, Dave. Now, one more for you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
I've got a lemon tree, it's a variegated lemon tree. I actually don't know what it's called, but I've been having trouble with snails and I've been pulling my hair out trying to get rid of the snails. I go out early in the morning and you'll kill four or five and you'll go the next day and the same story. And they're not big snails. Some of them are quite small, smaller than your little fingernail. And look, I've used the fender, I've put broken eggshells, I've put trays from pot plants with yeast and sugar and water in. Is there anything else I can do for that?
You can get anti-snail sprays. You can't necessarily use that on the foliage, but you'd be able to use that on the trunk of the plant and around the ground of the plant that stops the snails going up there. Another way to do it is, have you used any mulch, like sugarcane mulch?
Look, I've got a lot of wood chip around it. I haven't got any sugarcane mulch.
Yeah, I'd give some sugarcane mulch. I hear tell that snails don't like going over sugarcane mulch. So that's probably a way to do it. And, of course, you said you've used Defender. You've just got little houses there for the snails to go into. That's also a good way to do that, like the old ice cream container with some holes cut in it and have your Defender in there with a brick or something on the top so... the lizards or the other animals can't get in there and attack it, and they'll be attracted into that darker area. They'll feed on the Defender. So I think, look, what you're doing is, the right thing. It's just a bit of a multi-factorial approach you need to take there, the spray, the mulch, and maybe some more snail houses.
Yeah, what was the spray made anti? What?
There's just a anti-snail spray. When you go to your local garden centre, they'll be able to show you one of those.
All right. And, look, last question. Heard you a few months ago talking about moths in your lawn, and you did mention a product to spray the lawn with. I just didn't write it down, so let me know what that is, please.
Yeah, it'd be an iron product. You can go along to your local garden centre, and they can help you out with that. And the iron just breaks down the moss. That's the best way to do it. You could also, if you wanted to, try some sort of fungicide. Probably not as successful rather than using the iron.
Okay. All right. Great to help.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, see you, Peter. Bye-bye.
Putting copper or copper coins into the ground. I thought that was not real. I thought that was a bit of a fake thing, but apparently it helps against fighting fungi and stuff.
Okay, yeah, well, it probably would because, copper is, we use copper oxychloride all the time as a fungicide, so it would work. It So it goes up through the plant, I guess. That's a way to do it. You wouldn't want to use any, you know, expensive ancient Roman copper coins or something that you'd found, would you? Just a couple of old 1 and 2 cent.
Or any collector coins.
Yes. Yeah. 1 or 2 cent pieces.
Where's the old old king coin? Oh, it's in the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Propping up the tomato plant.
Yeah, that penny that, you know, it's only, you know, got one number on it or something. It's, worth $17 million. Where is it?
It's in the ground. It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM. We've got Margaret from Anna Bay, and she's got, it's like weeds in a lawn.
Doesn't sound good, Margaret. Tell us about them.
Well, afternoon, Scotty. It's a weed that grows like a... It spreads, and you can pull it up back to the beginning, if you know what I mean, where it started. And
yes.
It's got like, it's like little leaves in bunches, and it kills the grass. Like I've been digging it up, but I can't get on top of it, so I wondered if there was something. Do you understand what I'm not?
No, that's perfectly fine. Have you actually pulled out the sprayer and given it a spray?
No.
Okay. I think that's probably time to do that. Need to go down to your local garden centre. What sort of lawn have you actually got?
Oh, grass.
Grass. That's perfectly fine. Look, the reason I ask that is because buffalo can be a little bit tender to some chemicals. So, you know, even if you just take a...
buffalo.
Sorry?
I think it might be buffalo. I think I'm not very good on what grass is.
No, that's perfectly fine. Look, if you pull out the old camera phone, take a photo or take a few bits of it down to your local garden centre and say, hey, this is my lawn. Also take some of the weed as well and say, hey, this is the weed. And they should be able to sell you a chemical, a selective herbicide that's going to get rid of that weed for you, or at least just knock it back so that it's not, you know, growing as quickly and you can get more on top of it. So, look, I think that's the best thing for you to do, without being able to identify it here now. Take your grass, take some of the weed and say, please help, please I need a spray for this. And they'll be able to recommend, you know, when to do it. And usually you do it when we're not going to get any rain because you want that herbicide to dry and work on the weed. So you need at least, you know, 5 to 8 hours of dry before you get rain so that it can be successfully absorbed. And most of the herbicides that we use actually, you know, use the sun to burn it off as well. So important that you're going to get a few sunny days afterwards. And they'll also just talk to you about, how to spray it on, you know, successfully without wind and just being, you know, careful about doing that sort of thing. Important that you take it along with you so that they can have a look and see what's going to do the
would
job for
be,
you.
Not knowing exactly what the weed is, could it be picked up in the lawnmower and like from my next door neighbours have a lot of it, a real lot, and I know the strip up between their driveway and my place. And they've got a lot of it there, and I don't know if I'm picking it up from there when I'm mowing, and it's dropping out in my lawn or something. Because I thought last year I got on top of it, but I did some the other day, spent an hour and a half, and then I looked yesterday when I mowed, and I thought, there's just up there again.
Look, unfortunately, the answer to that is yes. You probably have picked it up. If you're noticing it flowering and you're seeing some seed around, then it is going to get sucked up by the lawnmower. And unfortunately, just the nature of the mower, it, you know, will distribute it back down around your lawn as well. The wind, if it's, if it has gone to seed, then wind will just naturally blow seed around. But yeah, look, unfortunately, the lawnmower is often the culprit for spreading weeds around. So look, there's not much you can do about that, save for, after you've done your neighbour's bit, giving it a good old hose out or whatever in the catcher and around and underneath. But that's about the most you can do to try and stop that spreading around.
Okay. Thanks very much for your help.
Okay. Not a problem. Thank you for the call.
Okay. Have a good day.
Cheers.
Sounds like my street with all the dandelions and...
Yes. Yeah. What's your lawn like at the moment?
Oh, it's freshly cut. Thank you very much.
Is it green? That's the main thing.
It is green. Yeah, it is green at this stage. Yeah, the front lawn's green.
Yes, good.
And just got rid of all the dandelions yesterday.
Have you had to do the bindi dance or anything out there to pick up the paper? Or
yeah, that's every it's a bindi dance.
It's a danger, isn't it?
I think the whole street, the whole block.
Okay.
Possibly, so in the next few streets, it's just there's bindies everywhere.
You almost need steel cap boots to get out to get the newspaper. Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much. We just need one person to spray the whole suburb.
That would be right. That'd be nice. I mean, it's also good for, you know, your neighbour if there is that happening, just to spray a little bit extra, and you know, because it stops that spread of seed back into, you know, the next door neighbour's garden. So
yeah, right, yeah,
yeah, doing that's not a bad thing to do at all. So yeah, hopefully we can that'll happen up in Anna Bay.
That's something worth noting then.
Yes, absolutely.
And we've got Jenny from Stockton. She's got a question about nutgrass and onion weed.
Good afternoon, Jenny. What is happening over in Stockton? It doesn't sound good.
Are you there, Jenny?
Oh, dear.
She doesn't seem to be there at all at the moment.
I hope the onion weed hasn't, just gone too rampant over there in Stockton and it's hung up the phone on her and taken
Hello?
Over. Oh, yep, there she is. Hey, oh, you're safe,
sorry.
Jenny. That's
I'm
the,
so sorry.
Oh, no, we were worried about you. The onion weed had gone too just
well,
crazy over
right.
there.
It started taking
yeah,
people.
I think it could. I'm not actually sure if it's onion weed or nut grass that we've got.
Yes.
It's the one that just multiplies. It's the tiniest little, it has all these little creations, little babies that it creates. And
yes.
then that tends to, any one of them can become a whole new nut grass or yeah. onion weed. I'm not sure which one it is. So we've hit it with some sledgehammer
yes.
spray, and I've heard that you're best to spray it when they're in flower. So we've done it just again now, but we don't seem to be winning.
It's a really, really difficult plant to get rid of. The worst thing you can do is try and pull it out or dig it out, because you might have noticed that those little bulbless, those little onions, they just sort of fall away. They slough away, don't they? So if
yes.
you try and pull it out, you're just spreading it more and more. So, yeah, using the chemicals are really the only way to do it. If it's not in the – is it in the lawn or in the garden?
It's in both, but
okay.
So we've got. I've decided to go to Cooch because mm-hmm. Cooch, I think, can probably stand some sprays for broadleaf and other.
That's
so I'm
correct,
hoping
yeah.
that in going to Cooch, we might be able to slow its tide. But it's everywhere. It tends to come up. Even when I think I've gotten on top of it, it comes up again very quickly. So I'm not sure whether to completely start again and take the whole lawn out and replant. What would be your suggestion?
Look, I don't know that that's actually going to do the job for you, unfortunately, because it just remains in the soil. And look, I have in the past tried to replace whole, garden beds and get rid of the soil. And the trouble is you leave one little bit there
yeah.
and it's all sort of done and dusted for you. So for the garden beds, you can also heavily mulch as well and try and get rid of it that way. In the lawn, I've always tended to think that, you know, in summer you're just mowing fairly constantly. It's sort of just, you just don't see it. It keeps it under control. A bit different in winter, unfortunately, when it does keep on going. So mulching in the garden, you can just keep on spraying like you were using sledgehammer. That's perfectly fine to use. You could also use a glyphosate type one, which is zero, but you've got to remember that anything that, glyphosate touches is going to die. So you just have to be really careful about that. Look, in the lawn, you really can't spray glyphosate, but I have in the past done this trick. And the trick is that you let it grow and get nice and long. And if it's flowering, fantastic. What you do is you put on a rubber glove. You then go
yep.
and put a cotton glove on the top, over the top of the rubber glove to protect your fingers.
Yep.
And I always put on a pair of sunglasses. Oh, I wear glasses, so I'm safe there. But if you don't, put on some sunglasses or some sort of eye protection so you don't go stupidly sort of, you know, scratching your eye when you've got glyphosate all over it.
Oh, yes, that's
yeah.
clever. Yeah.
yeah, and then you dip your gloved finger into the, you know, into the glyphosate. It can just be pure if you really want it to be. And then just go and run your fingers with the glove on again up over the leaf of the plant. And that way you're getting pure glyphosate onto the onion grass, but you're missing out. You're not actually harming your lawn. And that's the most important thing, because if you start spraying glyphosate around on your lawn, no matter how good a shot you think you are, you might be Clint Eastwood, but you are going to definitely get your lawn. So the old glove trick is the way to go. Persistence is the way to do it. You have to do that a few times, unfortunately, to keep it all under control.
No, thank you so much. I had tried the Zero before, but I tried a paintbrush and that was not exacting enough and it was very time consuming. But the glove is a great idea and I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'll certainly give that a go.
Okay. Well, look, let us know how you go. Always happy to hear some feedback about those ideas.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all that advice.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jenny.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. The old classic technique, the old rubber glove and the cotton glove.
Well, we've recommended a few times here, haven't we? But it does work. And the glasses, you and I don't have to worry right. so much about that. We'll never poke our eyes out.
Sometimes you still go underneath and...
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Probably better protective goggles with the sides bits on them.
Yeah, probably go to the hardware shop or whatever and get some of those. Yeah,
especially if you're a big eye scratcher.
Yes, definitely that.
Scotty Sharp, we've got a couple more things you want to talk to us about today. The Christmas bush, I think you mentioned earlier.
Yes, New South Wales Christmas bush. It is out in flower. It's pretty early, actually. Well, no, it's not really because we're almost mid-November when I think about it. Where has the year gone and all that sort of stuff? Out in flower. It looks absolutely spectacular in sandy places like up around the bay. So if you just want to have a drive up there at the moment, all out in flower, it looks spectacular. You can have them in your garden, not a problem at all. If you've got really clay soil or really wet conditions, they're not a plant that likes that. That's why they do so well up at the bay, because it's really nice and sandy and well-drained. You can get dwarf, smaller growing ones that you can put into a pot so you can have a nice, well-drained mix in the pot, a native mix of some sort, and you'll be able to grow your New South Wales Christmas bush there.
Are they be all right inside?
No, definitely not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're a full sun, you know, semi-afternoon shade plant. But look, they're bird attracting. So if you've got a nice, well-drained sort of garden, you'll be able to get them there. The red thing actually isn't the flower.
Oh.
No, it's the bract. The flower is just like a little white thing that you'll see inside there. But absolutely bird attracting, masses of flowers. Really lovely when you cut them and take them inside as a cut flower, just like a beautiful spray of red. So, yeah, an easy plant to grow if you've got the right conditions. If you haven't, forget about it. You need that well-drained soil.
Scottish Up, thank you very much. We'll catch you again next Monday.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.